Principles of Economics textbook. Textbook available for free at cnx.org. Audio recording available for free at educateforfree.com. Summary, Chapter 11, 11.1, Corporate Mergers. A corporate merger involves two private firms joining together. An acquisition refers to one firm buying another firm. In either case, two formerly independent firms become one firm. Antitrust laws seek to ensure active competition in markets, sometimes by preventing large firms from forming through mergers and acquisitions, sometimes by regulating business practices that might restrict competition, and sometimes by breaking up large firms into smaller competitors. A four-firm concentration ratio is one way of measuring the extent of competition in a market. It is calculated by adding the market shares, that is, the percentage of total sales, of the four largest firms in the market. A Herfindahl-Hirschman Index, HHI, is another way of measuring the extent of competition in a market. It is calculated by taking the market shares of all firms in the market, squaring them, and then summing the total. The forces of globalization and new communications and information technology have increased the level of competition faced by many firms by increasing the amount of competition from other regions and countries. 11.2, regulating anti-competitive behavior. Firms are blocked by antitrust authorities from openly colluding to form a cartel that will reduce output and raise prices. Companies sometimes attempt to find other ways around these restrictions, and consequently, many antitrust cases involve restrictive practices that can reduce competition in certain circumstances, like tie-in sales, bundling, and predatory pricing. 11.3, regulating natural monopolies. In the case of a natural monopoly, market competition will not work well, and so, rather than allowing an unregulated monopoly to raise price and reduce output, the government may wish to regulate price and/or output. Common examples of regulation are public utilities, the regulated firms that often provide electricity and water service. Cost plus regulation refers to government regulation of a firm which sets the price that a firm can charge over a period of time by looking at the firm's accounting costs and then adding a normal rate of profit. Price cap regulation refers to government regulation of a firm where the government sets a price level several years in advance. In this case, the firm either make high profits if it manages to produce at lower costs, or sell a higher quantity than expected, or suffer low profits or losses if costs are high or it sells less than expected. 11.4, the Great Deregulation Experiment. The U.S. economy experienced a wave of deregulation in the late 1970s and early 1980s when a number of government regulations that had set prices and quantities produced in a number of industries were eliminated. Major accounting scandals in the early 2000s, and more recently the Great Recession, have spurred new regulation to prevent similar occurrences in the future. Regulatory capture occurs when the industries being regulated end up having a strong influence over what regulations exist. Chapter 12, 12.1. The economics of pollution. Economic production can cause environmental damage. This trade-off arises for all countries, whether high income or low income, and whether their economies are market-oriented or command-oriented. An externality occurs when an exchange between a buyer and seller has an impact on a third party who is not part of the exchange. An externality, which is sometimes also called a spillover, can have a negative or positive impact on the third party. If those parties imposing a negative externality on others had to take the broader social cost of their behavior into account, they would have an incentive to reduce the production of whatever is causing the negative externality. In the case of a positive externality, the third party is obtaining benefits from the exchange between a buyer and a seller, but they are not paying for these benefits. If this is the case, then markets would tend to underproduce output because suppliers are not aware of the additional demand from others. If the parties that are generating benefits to others would be somehow compensated for these external benefits, they would have an incentive to increase production of whatever is causing the positive externality. 12.2, command and control regulation. Command and control regulation sets specific limits for pollution emissions and/or specific pollution control technologies that must be used. Although such regulations have helped to protect the environment, they have three shortcomings. They provide no incentive for going beyond the limits they set. They offer limited flexibility on where and how to reduce pollution, and they often have politically motivated loopholes. 12.3, market-oriented environmental tools. Examples of market-oriented environmental policies, also referred to as cap and trade programs, include pollution charges, marketable permits, and a better defined property rights. Market-oriented environmental policies include taxes, markets, and property rights so that those who impose negative externalities must face the social cost. 12.4, the benefits and costs of U.S. environmental laws. We can make a strong case, taken as a whole, that the benefits of the U.S. environmental regulation have outweighed the costs. As the extent of environmental regulation increases, additional expenditures on environmental protection will probably have increasing marginal costs and decreasing marginal benefits. This pattern suggests that the flexibility and cost savings of market-oriented environmental policies will become more important. 12.5, international environmental issues. Certain global environmental issues, such as global warming and biodiversity, spill over national borders and will need to be addressed with some form of international agreement. 12.6, the trade-off between economic output and environmental protection. Depending on their different income levels and political preferences, countries are likely to make different choices about allocative efficiency, that is, the choice between economic output and environmental protection along the production possibility frontier. However, all countries should prefer to make a choice that shows productive efficiency. That is, the choice is somewhere on the production possibility frontier rather than inside it. Chapter 13, 13.1, Why the Private Sector Underinvests in Innovation. Competition creates pressure to innovate. However, if new inventions can be easily copied, then the original inventor loses the incentive to invest further in research and development. New technology often has positive externalities. That is, there are often spillovers from the invention of new technology that benefit firms other than the inventor. The social benefit of an invention, once these spillovers are taken into account, typically exceeds the private benefit to the inventor. If inventors could receive a greater share of the broader social benefits for their work, they would have a greater incentive to seek out new inventions. 13.2, how governments can encourage innovation. Public policy with regard to technology must often strike a balance. For example, patents provide an incentive for inventors, but they should be limited to genuinely new inventions and not extend forever. Government has a variety of policy tools for increasing the rate of return for new technology and encouraging its development, including direct government funding of R&D, tax incentives for R&D, protection of intellectual property, and forming cooperative relationships between universities and the private sector. 13.3, public goods. A public good has two characteristics. It is not excludable and non-rivalrous. Non-excludable means that it is costly or impossible for one user to exclude others from using the good. Non-rivalrous means that when one person uses the good, it does not prevent others from using it. Markets often have a difficult time producing public goods before free riders will attempt to use the public good without paying for it. The free rider problem can be overcome through measures to assure that users of the public good pay for it. Such measures include government actions, social pressures, and specific situations where markets have discovered a way to collect payments. Chapter 14, 14.1, Drawing the Poverty Line. Wages are influenced by supply and demand in labor markets, which can lead to very low incomes for some people and very high incomes for others. Poverty and income inequality are not the same thing. Poverty applies to the condition of people who cannot afford the necessities of life. Income inequality refers to the disparity between those with higher and lower incomes. The poverty rate is what percentage of the population lives below the poverty line, which is determined by the amount of income that it takes to purchase the necessities of life. choosing a poverty line will always be somewhat controversial. 14.2. The poverty trap. A poverty trap occurs when government support payments for the poor decline as the poor earn more income. As a result, the poor do not end up with much more income when they work because the loss of government support largely or completely offsets any income that is earned by working. The bite of the poverty trap can be reduced by phasing out government benefits more slowly, as well as by imposing requirements for work as a condition of receiving benefits and a time limit on benefits. 14.3. The safety net. The group of government programs that assist the poor are called the safety net. In the United States, prominent safety net programs include temporary assistance to needy families, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, the Earned Income Tax Credit, Medicaid, and the Special Supplemental Food Program for women, infants, and children. 14.4. Income inequality, measurement and causes. Measuring inequality involves making comparisons across the entire distribution of income, not just the poor. One way of doing this is to divide the population into groups, like quintiles, and then calculate what share of income is received by each group. An alternative approach is to draw Lorenz curves, which compare the cumulative income actually received to a perfectly equal distribution of income. Income inequality in the United States increased substantially from the late 1970s and early 1980s into the 2000s. The two most common explanations cited by economists are changes in the structure of households that have led to more two-earner couples and single-parent families, and the effect of new information and communications technology on wages. 14.5. Government policies to reduce income inequality. Policies that can affect the level of economic inequality include redistribution between rich and poor, making it easier for people to climb the ladder of opportunity, and estate taxes, which are taxes on inheritances. Pushing too aggressively for economic equality can run the risk of decreasing economic incentives. However, a moderate push for economic equality can increase economic output, both through methods like improved education and by building a base of political support for market forces. Chapter 15, 15.1, Unions. A labor union is an organization of workers that negotiates as a group with employers over compensation and work conditions. Union workers in the United States are paid more on average than other workers with comparable education and experience. Thus, either union workers must be more productive to match this higher pay, or the higher pay will lead employers to find ways of hiring fewer union workers than they otherwise would. American union membership has been falling for decades. Some possible reasons include the shift of jobs to service industries, greater competition from globalization, the passage of worker-friendly legislation, and U.S. laws that are less favorable to organizing unions. 15.2. Employment discrimination. Discrimination occurs in a labor market when workers with the same economic characteristics, such as education, experience, and skill, are paid different amounts because of race, gender, religion, age, or disability status. In the United States, female workers on average earn less than male workers, and black workers on average earn less than white workers. There is a controversy over the extent to which these earnings gaps can be explained by discrimination or by differences in factors like education and job experience. Free markets can allow discrimination to occur, but the threat of a loss of sale or loss of productive workers can also create incentives for a firm not to discriminate. A range of public policies can be used to reduce earnings gaps between men and women or between white and other racial ethnic groups, requiring equal pay for equal work and attaining more equal educational outcomes. 15.3. Immigration. The recent level of U.S. immigration is at a historically high level if measured in absolute numbers, but not if measured as a share of population. The overall gains to the U.S. economy from immigration are real but relatively small. However, immigration also causes effects like slightly lower wages for low-skilled workers and budget problems for certain state and local governments. Chapter 16, 16.1, The Problem of Imperfect Information and Asymmetric Information. Many economic transactions are made in a situation of imperfect information, where either the buyer, the seller, or both are less than 100% certain about the qualities of what is being bought and sold. When information about the quality of products is highly imperfect, it may be difficult for a market to exist. A lemon is the name given to a product that turns out after the purchase to have low quality. When the seller has more accurate information about the quality of the product than the buyer will be hesitant to buy out of fear of purchasing a lemon. Markets have many ways to deal with imperfect information. In goods markets, buyers facing imperfect information about products may depend upon money-back guarantees, warranties, service contracts, and reputation. In labor markets, employers facing imperfect information about potential employees may turn to resumes, recommendations, occupational licenses for certain jobs, and employment for trial periods. In capital markets, lenders facing imperfect information about borrowers may require detailed loan applications and credit checks, cosigners, and collateral. 16.2, insurance and imperfect information. Insurance is a way of sharing risk. A group of people pay premiums for insurance against some unpleasant event, and those in the group who actually experience the unpleasant event then receive some compensation. The fundamental law of insurance is that what the average person pays in over time must be very similar to what the average person gets out. In an actuarial fair insurance policy, the premiums that a person pays to the insurance company are the same as the average amount of benefits for a person in that risk group. Moral hazard arises in insurance markets because those who are insured against a risk will have less reason to take steps to avoid the costs from the risk. Many insurance policies have deductibles, co-payments, or co-insurance. A deductible is the maximum amount that the policyholder must pay out of pocket before the insurance company pays the rest of the bill. A co-payment is a flat fee that an insurance policyholder must pay before receiving services. Co-insurance requires the policyholder to pay a certain percentage of costs. Deductibles, co-payments, and co-insurance reduce moral hazard by requiring the insured party to bear some of the costs before collecting insurance benefits. In a fee-for-service health financing system, medical care providers are reimbursed according to the cost of services they provide. An alternative method of organizing healthcare is through health maintenance organizations, or HMOs, where medical care providers are reimbursed according to the number of patients they handle, and it is up to the providers to allocate resources between patients who received more or fewer health care services. Adverse selection arises in insurance markets when insurance buyers know more about the risks they face than does the insurance company. As a result, the insurance companies run the risk that low-risk parties will avoid its insurance because it is too costly for them, while high-risk parties will embrace it because it looks like a good deal to them. Chapter 17, 17.1, How Businesses Raise Financial Capital. Companies can raise early-stage financial capital in several ways, from their owners or managers, personal savings, or credit cards, and from private investors like angel investors and venture capital firms. A bond is a financial contract through which a borrower agrees to repay the amount that was borrowed. A bond specifies an amount that will be borrowed, the amounts that will be repaid over time based on the interest rate when the bond is issued, and the time until repayment. Corporate bonds are issued by firms. Municipal bonds are issued by cities. State bonds by U.S. states, and treasury bonds by the federal government through the U.S. Department of the Treasury. Stock represents ownership of a firm. The stock of a company is divided into shares. A firm receives financial capital when it sells stock to the public. A company's first sale of stock to the public is called the initial public offering, or IPO. However, a firm does not receive any funds when one shareholder sells stock in the firm to another investor. The rate of return on stock is received in two forms, dividends and capital gains. A private company is usually owned by the people who run it on a day-to-day basis, although it can be run by hired managers. A private company owned and run by an individual is called a sole proprietorship, while a firm owned and run by a group is called a partnership. When a firm decides to sell stock that can be bought and sold by financial investors, then the firm is owned by its shareholders, who in turn elect a board of directors to hire top day-to-day management and is called a public company. Corporate governance is the name economists give to the institutions that are supposed to watch over top executives, though it does not always work. 17.2. How households supply financial capital. All investments can be categorized according to three key characteristics: average expected return, degree of risk, and liquidity. To get a higher rate of return, an investor must typically accept either more risk or less liquidity. Banks are an example of financial intermediaries, an institution that operates to coordinate supply and demand in the financial capital market. Banks offer a range of accounts, including checking accounts, savings accounts, and certificates of deposit. Under the Federal Deposit Insurance Program, banks purchase insurance against the risk of a bank failure. A typical bond promises the financial investor a series of payments over time based on the interest rate at the time the bond is issued, and then repayment of what was borrowed. Bonds that offer a high rate of return but also a relatively high chance of defaulting on the payments are called high risk, high yield, or junk bonds. The bond yield is the rate of return that a bond promises to pay at the time of purchase. Even when bonds make payments based on a fixed rate of interest, they are somewhat risky because if interest rates rise for the economy as a whole, an investor who owns bonds issued at a lower interest rate is now locked into the low rate and suffers a loss. Changes in the price of a stock depend on changes in expectations about future profits. Investing in any individual firm is somewhat risky, so investors are wise to practice diversification, which means investing in a range of companies. A mutual fund purchases an array of stocks and/or bonds. An investor in the mutual fund then receives a return depending on the overall performance of the investments made by the fund as a whole. A mutual fund that seems to imitate the overall behavior of the stock market is called an index fund. Housing and other tangible assets can also be regarded as forms of financial investment, which pay a rate of return in the form of capital gains. Housing can also offer a non-financial return. Specifically, you can live in it. 17.3. How to accumulate personal wealth. It is extremely difficult, even for financial professionals, to predict changes in future expectations and thus to choose the stocks whose price is going to rise in the future. Most Americans can accumulate considerable financial wealth if they follow two rules: complete significant additional education and training after graduating from high school, and start saving money early in life. Chapter 18, 18.1. Voter participation and costs of elections. The theory of rational ignorance says voters will recognize that their single vote is extremely unlikely to influence the outcome of an election. As a consequence, they will choose to remain uninformed about issues and not vote. This theory helps explain why voter turnout is so low in the United States. 18.2. Special interest politics. Special interest politics arises when a relatively small group, called a special interest group, each of whose members has a large interest in a political outcome, devotes a lot of time and energy to lobbying for the group's preferred choice. Meanwhile, the large majority, each of whose members has only a small interest in this issue, pays no attention. Pork barrel spending is defined as legislation whose benefits are concentrated on a single district, while the costs are spread widely over the country. Log rolling refers to a situation in which two or more legislators agree to vote for each other's legislation, which can then encourage pork barrel spending in many districts. 18.3. Flaws in the democratic system of government. Majority votes can run into difficulties when more than two choices exist. A voting cycle occurs when, in a situation with at least three choices, choice A is preferred by a majority vote to choice B, choice B is preferred by a majority vote to choice C, and choice C is preferred by a majority vote to choice A. In such a situation, it is impossible to identify what the majority prefers. Another difficulty arises when the vote is so divided that no choice receives a majority. A practical approach to microeconomic policy will need to take a realistic view of the specific strengths and weaknesses of markets and the specific strengths and weaknesses of government, rather than making the easy but wrong assumption that either the market or the government is always beneficial or always harmful. Chapter 19, 19.1, Measuring the Size of the Economy, Gross Domestic Product. The size of a nation's economy is commonly expressed as gross domestic product, or GDP, which measures the value of the output of all goods and services produced within the country in a year. GDP is measured by taking the quantities of all goods and services produced, multiplying them by their prices, and summing the total. Since GDP measures what is bought and sold in the economy, it can be measured either by the sum of what is purchased in the economy or what is produced. Demand can be divided into consumption, investment, government, exports, and imports. What is produced in the economy can be divided into durable goods, non-durable goods, services, structures, and inventories. To avoid double counting, GDP counts only final output of goods and services, not the production of intermediate goods or the value of labor in the chain of production. 19.2, adjusting nominal values to real values. The nominal value of an economic statistic is the commonly announced value. The real value is the value after adjusting for changes in inflation. To convert nominal economic data from several different years into real inflation-adjusted data, the starting point is to choose a base year arbitrarily and then use a price index to convert the measurements so that they are measured in the money prevailing in the base year. 19.3, tracking real GDP over time. Over the long term, U.S. real GDP have increased dramatically. At the same time, GDP has not increased the same amount each year. The speeding up and slowing down of GDP growth represents the business cycle. When GDP declines significantly, a recession occurs. A longer and deeper decline is a depression. Recessions begin at the peak of the business cycle and end at the trough. 19.4, comparing GDP among countries. Since GDP is measured in a country's currency, in order to compare different countries' GDPs, we need to convert them to a common currency. One way to do this is with the exchange rate, which is the price of one country's currency in terms of another. Once GDPs are expressed in a common currency, we can compare each country's GDP per capita by dividing GDP by population. Countries with large populations often have large GDPs, but GDP alone can be a misleading indicator of the wealth of a nation. A better measure is GDP per capita. 19.5. How well GDP measures the well-being of society. GDP is an indicator of a society's standard of living, but it is only a rough indicator. GDP does not directly take account of leisure, environmental qualities, levels of health and education, activities conducted outside the market, changes in inequality of income, increases in variety, increases in technology, or the positive or negative value that society may place on certain types of output. Chapter 20, 20.1, The Relatively Recent Arrival of Economic Growth. Since the early 19th century, there has been a spectacular process of long-run economic growth during which the world's leading economies, mostly those in Western Europe and North America, expanded GDP per capita at an average rate of about 2% per year. In the last half century, countries like Japan, South Korea, and China have shown the potential to catch up. The extensive process of economic growth, often referred to as modern economic growth, was facilitated by the Industrial Revolution, which increased worker productivity and trade, as well as the development of governance and market institutions. 20.2, Labor Productivity and Economic Growth. Productivity, the value of what is produced per worker or per hour worked, can be measured as the level of GDP per worker or GDP per hour. The United States experienced a productivity slowdown between 1973 and 1989. Since then, the U.S. productivity has rebounded, the current global recession notwithstanding. It is not clear whether the current growth in productivity will be sustained. The rate of productivity growth is the primary determinant of an economy's rate of long-term economic growth and higher wages. Over decades and generations, seemingly small differences of a few percentage points in the annual rate of economic growth make an enormous difference in GDP per capita. An aggregate production function specifies how certain inputs in the economy, like human capital, physical capital, and technology, lead to the output measured as GDP per capita. Compound interest and compound growth rates behave in the same way as productivity rates. Seemingly small changes in a percentage point can make big impacts on income over time. 20.3, components of economic growth. Over decades and generations, seemingly small differences of a few percentage points in the annual rate of economic growth make an enormous difference in GDP per capita. Capital deepening refers to an increase in the amount of capital per worker, either human capital per worker in the form of higher education or skills, or physical capital per worker. Technology, in its economic meaning, refers broadly to all new methods of production, which includes major scientific inventions, but also small inventions, and even better forms of management or other types of institutions. A healthy climate for growth in GDP per capita consists of improvements in human capital, physical capital, and technology in a market-oriented environment with supportive public policies and institutions. 20.4, economic convergence. When countries with lower levels of GDP per capita catch up to countries with higher levels of GDP per capita, the process is called convergence. Convergence can occur even when both high and low income countries increase investment in physical and human capital with the objective of growing GDP. This is because the impact of new investment in physical and human capital on low income countries may result in huge gains as new skills or equipment are combined with the labor force. In higher income countries, however, a level of investment equal to that of the low income country is not likely to have as big an impact, because the more developed country most likely has high levels of capital investment. Therefore, the marginal gain from this additional investment tends to be successively less and less. Higher income countries are more likely to have diminishing returns to their investments and must continually invent new technologies. This allows lower income economies to have a chance for convergent growth. However, many high income economies have developed economic and political institutions to provide a healthy economic climate for an ongoing stream of technological innovations. Continuous technological innovation can counterbalance diminishing returns to investments in human and physical capital.